RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome into this Thursday, June 7th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Getting deeper into the summer, are we? Still early, but gosh, next week we'll be talking about mid-June. Late July, NFL training camps start taking place. We've got college coaching camps going on right now. So a lot of stuff going on around the world of football. Even though still got a ways to go before the games take place, we'll be here before you know it. Hey, a lot to get to today. Want to pick up where we left off on learning more coaching and scouting terminology. We will get to the top running back units and got our story time segment. Maybe talk about some coaches that are on the hot seat. And we're going to clean out our mailbag. Gosh, we've got so many questions that we've got to answer. We're going to get to them today, folks, because we always want to make sure that we get them done in a timely fashion. They're mounting up. So I'm going to try to knock through them today. And, of course, invite you, any question you have, you want to talk about the world of football, get to us at LandryFootball.com. You can see the contact Chris, send the email, and we'll address it for you right here on this podcast. Want to remind you, if you're not yet a member of LandryFootball.com, what are you waiting for? Gosh almighty, we've got a great situation and a great opportunity for you to take advantage with our summer savings special. Why summer savings special? Hey, you know, it's not football season. Why do I want to get it? Well, let me tell you why. First of all, you get a summer savings that will get you a better discount for the football season, for next recruiting season, the draft, free agency, all the way for the next year. You get the best discount, 50% off any subscription package by using the coupon code SUMMER. But you also get all the team previews, all the daily notebooks, all the latest information, a lot of recruiting news going on now. Get better prepared, become a better fan, learn more about the game. That's why we want you to become involved and why we want you to become involved now. Take advantage of the special. It goes back to the regular price during this football season, which is still a great price, but why not get 50% off of that? Join us now. Use the coupon code SUMMER to take advantage. Okay. Want to get back into more of the coaching and scouting terminology session that I was involved in providing you on Tuesday. You want to get more into that now. And just a reminder as I take you through the rest of this terminology segment, look, it's not an inclusive list. It's something that I thought, let me jot down some things and put them in alphabetical order and had them up on the website. So I thought I'd kind of go over them. But there's just way too many to cover everything. Let me offer an opportunity that if you hear something, you want to learn more about something that I don't cover, send it in at a question. We'll address it here. It's just there's no way it can be too inclusive. We kind of ended in the area, kind of midway point of some things I wanted to cover. And you hear a lot about landmark. Landmark is the location. It could be of any player, could be a defender. In most cases, it's like, let's use this, for example, in the ball carrier. It's the location that the ball carrier must reach before setting the course upfield. The landmark could be a block, a key off guard, tackle, double team, or a point in the line of scrimmage. You aim for the outside hip of the tight end. That's the landmark. You got a landmark in routes. So hope that gives you an idea. I want to talk a little bit about some of the teaching of linebackers. In the 3-4 defense, one of the things that I always believed in is cross-training. And it's best to teach all linebackers on your team, vets as well as rookies, the inside linebacker position first before moving them outside. So you might hear this a lot. Not a lot of people do it, but I learned this from Belichick. the reason why, even if you've got an eye that is an outside backer, the reason why you want to put him at inside backer to teach him the outside backer position is when you learn the inside backer position, it teaches you the run fits and the best way to teach a defense. And it's important that you understand as an outside backer what the defensive end, what the inside backers are doing. And it really helps you do your job better. Now, it also, in the process, it cross-trains your player. So you can still get your best 3-4 linebackers on the field athletically by moving a guy from outside to inside or what have you. Long striders. What truly is a long strider? Is a guy that moves slower in and out of his breaks, but has good long vertical speed. I threw in the term luck. Everybody knows what luck is. But in the football vernacular, here's what I believe luck is. Is the unpredictable that talent takes advantage of. That's what I believe luck is. You get good breaks. Opposing teams make mistakes. In football, it's not like an individual sport like golf where you're playing a course. You can take advantage of somebody else's mistakes. You can take advantage of a ball bouncing a certain way. But luck is the unpredictable that talent takes advantage of. And talent includes player talent, coaching talent. I want to talk a little bit about some terms that are used, man coverage sacks and zone coverage interceptions. And there's a correlation to the amount of sacks and interceptions you have to how much man or zone coverage you play. When you're in man coverage, you get more sack opportunities, but less interception opportunities. When you're in zone coverage, you get less sack opportunities, but more interception opportunities. And the reason is, in man coverage, you might be able to stick with the receiver longer. So there's greater chance for the pass rush to get home. Not as good a chance for interceptions because your back is to the ball. There is a correlation there. Now, in zone coverage, you're facing the quarterback more, you're covering an area, you're in better position to make interceptions. But you are not in as good a position to cover longer because you're covering an area, and therefore the pass rush usually doesn't get home as quickly. Off-man coverage is man-to-man coverage where a defender is backed off the line of scrimmage as opposed to tight bump-and-run coverage, or press coverage, we like to call it. Bump and then run is obviously you bump and you turn and you run. Press coverage, you might be able to open up on playing press coverage, or you may turn and run. Open step is the initial step towards the sideline in the direction that the play is going. Pitch relationship, you hear that a little bit. It's proper spacing between the running back and quarterback on the option play. Typically 4 yards back and 4 yards outside the quarterback. It's seen most often in college. Playing under your pads, good base and weight balance and not being overextended. That's playing under your pad. Power play. No, it's not a hockey term. Well, it is a hockey term, but it's not what we're referring to here. Power play is a classic inside running play in which a lineman pulls around the center as an extra lead blocker. The ball carrier typically takes a drop step, then follows the pulling lineman. Pressure points, 4 places on the ball that need to be secured. The outside top of the ball held firmly with the thumb and index finger. This is a lot easier to show you. I'm going to do this on a video, by the way, give you a better feel for it. The outside top of the ball is held firmly with the thumb and index finger. The inside tip is held by the other 3 fingers. The outside panel is secured by the bicep and the back panel is secured by the body. Breakdown fumbles, I always study the pressure points. If you got your pressure points covered, should be able to prevent a fumble. Usually fumbles occur when you've got at least 1 pressure point uncovered. 2, it's very risky and very subjected to hits knocking the ball out. You hear the term run to daylight. What does that really mean? It's the directive to run to where the defenders are not. You talk about playing under your pads. What about running behind your pads? That's running with good form, good base, and balance without overextending. Very similar to playing under your pads. Playing is indicative of all players, blockers, running, obviously refers to the running backs, receivers. Scat back. In coaching, the running back, the scat back is the running back with a little blocking responsibility on a passing play. He's usually a quick, shifty runner who's adept at receiving. Scrape and shift. You hear that term a lot. The way a linebacker avoids blockers as opposed to taking them on. Screen passes. A lot of screens. We're going to do a series on screens and the different types, but just some things to know about screen passes. They work better against zone coverage because versus man coverage, there's a guy assigned to the running back or the receiver to see him leaking out for the screen pass. Whereas opposed to zone coverage, they're not accounted for and they have to be adjusted from guys coming off covering their zone. So important to understand. Setting the edge. The defender's ability to set his feet in the ground, sink his hip, and anchor against the run. Slip screen. Quick developing screen pass in which the back runs to a point on the line of scrimmage, vacated by the pass rushing in or outside backer, then turns to receive a pass, then cut upfield. Slow screen is a traditional screen pass in which the back sets as if he's pass blocking, then drifts to a spot behind a wall of blockers. Shuffle. One or two lateral steps in the backfield, usually before an interior run, then puts the back in better position to receive the handoff and attack the hole perpendicular to the line of scrimmage. Split side is the wide side of the field. Stacked alignment. It's a defensive alignment where a linebacker plays directly behind a defensive alignment. Stretch. You hear stretch play. It's a running play most strongly associated with modern zone blocking schemes. The ball carrier takes a course slanting towards the sideline while reading blocks and choosing to, one, cram it, which is plunge straight ahead into a designed gap, then cut it, which is turn inside where the defenders are often out of position, or kick it, which is bounce it outside and search for more running room. Cutting and cramming are preferred as backs who kick it often do not last long. Cutting it inside is usually the best course of action because you get defenders out of position and they do not have the boundary to use as an extra defender. And bouncing it outside, the one thing defenses have today in spades are speed. So you want to make guys use the speed against them and not try to outrun them to the boundary where you've got, again, the boundary as an extra defender. Tampa 2 coverage. You hear this. They run the Tampa 2 defense. There's no such thing as a Tampa 2 defense. Tampa 2 is a coverage. The difference with a Tampa 2, it's a 2-deep coverage, with the subtle difference being the depth in which the mic backer has to get on coverage to create basically almost a cover 3 look. Monty Kiffin was the guy that really developed that. Kiffin actually played a lot of man coverage on first down and some on second down, but on third down he played a lot of Tampa 2, especially on third and long. He liked to run a lot of corner blitzes as well. But getting basically a Tampa 2 really morphs into a Tampa 3 with that mic backer getting depth. Probably the best in modern history at making that Tampa 2 a Tampa 3 look is Brian Urlacher. He was the best college safety, got that depth to get down the deep middle of the field. Three technique, and of course, again, we've kind of gone into a lot, the three technique, five technique. We're going to go into that more deeply as well. Three technique is a defensive lineman who lines up on the outside shade of the guard in the B gap and is considered to be the centerpiece of the 4-3 defense. The ideal three technique is very quick and possesses better than 4.95 speed. Two deep coverage. Zone coverage where each safety is responsible for half the deep portion of the field. This requires a safety to have a lot of range, being able to cover receivers to the deep outside. Two gap. First, the ability of a defensive lineman to cover two gaps on the offensive line. They're not rushing upfield in a two gap. You're controlling and holding that point. You're building a wall. Clog up those two gaps to prevent any penetration through it, not you to go through it. The design of that defense is to not get upfield and get trapped, but to hold the point of attack so as to not allow guys to come through. West Coast offense. Now, this is one that will require a special conversation. But to kind of sum up basic principles, it's a horizontal passing game, shorter pass routes with less vertical shots downfield. It's easier passes to throw and complete. It's quarterback friendly. It's using the short pass as an extension of the running game. Those are some basic elements of the West Coast. Final, one of the things I mentioned too, is you hear this, work the edges. I use it a lot. It's when the defensive lineman works the fringes instead of attacking the blocker straight ahead. So again, that gives you, again, not a comprehensive list, just a list, something to maybe help you with some terminology that maybe that you've not had a lot of familiarity with to this point. So hope that gives you a good feel for things. All right, I want to get into a few running back units in college football that I think have a chance to be really good. When I study the spring tape, you know, Alabama's jump out at me as they tend to do every year, but it's the deepest. You know, Damian Harris is coming back. He's a senior that's going to lead the team. Najee Harris is really impressed in his limited action. Brian Robinson, Josh Jacobs, really, really good running backs that would be starting for most places. Really good running back core. I like Wisconsin's as well. Jonathan Taylor delivered one of the best statistical seasons as a freshman last year. The New Jersey native, really good. Good offensive line. Frederick Shaw, Chris James, Tywan Deal are also good backs that can really play. I like Stanford's running backs. Bryce Love's a legitimate Heisman candidate, outstanding player. Cameron Scarlett, Trevor Spates. Ohio State's got a best running attack in the Big Ten. J.K. Dobbins is outstanding. Mike Weber's really good. True freshman, Master Teague is going to be in the mix as well. Really good units. Georgia, yeah, they're replacing Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. DeAndre Swift, Elijah Holyfield, Brian Herrien. How about the great recruiting class delivers Zamir White? Great, great talent. James Cook, Dalvin Cook's brother. Loaded, loaded group. Florida State, Oklahoma, Washington, Boston College, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Clemson, Miami, Michigan, Mississippi State. I think Missouri, Florida, Kentucky, Notre Dame, USC, Memphis, Michigan State, Maryland, all good running back corps. But those are the guys that jump out at me the most. We'll get to the running backs, excuse me, the receivers, tight ends on Tuesday, kind of work the way through the entire group. All right, I want to get to answer some of your questions, and we're going to tie that in with some other stuff, and then we'll wrap it up with the story time day. Jacob asks, he says, I took your advice, started doing a little homework for the coming season. He said he looked at past defensive stats. One of the things he noticed was that many Big Ten teams were listed very highly in defensive yards per passing attempt. Talking about the stat that's important and contributes a lot to how we evaluate. However, and he goes on to mention, Wisconsin is 3, Michigan 5, Iowa 10, Ohio State 11, Penn State 12, Michigan, Minnesota, Indiana, Northwestern. And he wanted to get my opinion on whether it was more reflective of the pass defenses being that good or the pass offenses. And quite frankly, it's more to do with the lack of really good pass offenses in the Big Ten. This is where stats can lie a little bit. I think that Wisconsin's defense has been pretty good. Ohio State's defense has been pretty good. Iowa's defense has played pretty well. Michigan's defense has been good. But I think if you look at the schedules and look at who they've played, they've not had a lot of resistance there with real challenges with really good passing offenses. So I think that is some of both, but I would say that it's probably slanted more 60-65% of the lack of quality passing games. For example, if you look at the defenses in the Big 12, yeah, the defenses in the Big 12 are bad. Big part of the reason why their defenses are bad is because their offenses are really good. Trying to defend maybe, you know, Big 12 offenses would be a lot more challenging for teams in the Big Ten and the SEC for that matter. But the other side of that is you can run the football on those Big 12 teams and shorten the game and limit their possession. Yet another question said, do you believe it's reasonable to expect a correlation between sacks and interceptions? By this, I mean that if you're getting a high number of sacks, should you expect your coverage people to make a certain number of interceptions? Absolutely. In fact, we have a term for it. We call it pressure picks and coverage sacks. You put pressure on the quarterback, it's going to force the ball out quicker and put you in a better position to make plays on the ball defensively. When you have good coverage, you can allow the pass rush to get home a little bit more. Those things absolutely correlate. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, and kind of going through some of the terminology, you're going to see there's a direct correlation in the amount of sacks and interceptions you have, depending on how much man or zone coverage you play. When you're in man coverage, you're going to get more sack opportunities, but less interception opportunities. When you're in zone coverage, you get less sack opportunities, but more interception opportunities. So it absolutely has a correlative effect, no doubt about it. Also, let me say this too. One follow up on your just general college stats question. The stats are less valuable than say in the NFL because it does reflect greatly on your level of competition. I think your conference stats are more important than your overall stats. Now, you play good level of competition out of conference has more value. Less level of competition, it's less value. So keep that in mind. Matt asks, surely you remember the uber-talented Oklahoma running back from Philadelphia, Mississippi, Marcus Dupree. Of course I do. As a scout, can you evaluate him as a football player? Was he as talented as the hype and legend? Yes, he was. He was so unusually big and fast. Now, Herschel Walker was around, and he had a lot of similarities. Bo Jackson came right around that time as well. Very much like those guys. Very much Adrian Peterson-esque. He dominated. Back in those days, Oklahoma had, you'd have 10, 11, 12 running backs that they would start practice with. And, he started like 10th, just because a young guy. And he was like one in a nanosecond. He was so much better. He stood out. He had a lot of influences, like a lot of these guys in his life, that, some kind of led him into different directions and a pull back home. And, could have been a great one. Still very talented. Still had a good career, but not the dominant career that we all thought that he had the potential to be. Which the moral of the story here is you can be as talented as anybody that's ever played the game, but if you don't have the focus, you don't have the direction, you don't do things the right way, well, you won't realize those dreams. You won't achieve those successes. Those things are really, really important to know that it's about what you do and how you conduct yourself, how you handle yourself. And it's not always these guys are bad, but they're influenced negatively that sometimes can really hurt their status onto the next level, whether it's high school to college, college to the NFL. Also, we got a question here asking me to analyze the coordinators at Wisconsin and how good do you think they are? Well, Paul is really the main guy that really kind of oversees the offense. And he's as good as any at mixing things up and teaching the run game and I think the intricacies of the short passing game. He's very, very good at defensively, he gives a lot more leeway to Jim Leonard, who I think is a fast-rising superstar coach. Obviously, a Wisconsin guy. He's going to get a big-time head coaching job. I mean, a Big Ten head coaching job soon. He's that good. And as good as a guy like Dave Aranda was, this guy is the equal, maybe even better in some respects. This guy is phenomenal. He asked, can you break down and explain why Wisconsin has become so successful the last 30 years? Perennial losing program to a power program just under the Michigan and Ohio States. How good can they get? How high realistic is their ceiling? First of all, let's break it down. How did they get so good? You got to give credit to Barry Alvarez. I remember when Barry got the job there off the Notre Dame staff. He went in and he built a culture there and hired very good coaches. And he was very good at doing that as a head coach. He delegated well. They had good successes. It spurred growth of really good assistants that had ties to the program. They don't spend a ton of money on the program, but they spend enough, and they spend judiciously, and they can spend more now because of the influence of the television money. Everybody's got more money. They spend it wisely. In short, they've hired good coaches, and they develop players. And with that, they recruit players that fit their profile. Hardworking guys, smart guys, guys that are undersized that they can build in the weight room and get better and become versatile. They're always well-positioned on defense. They always develop a few good pro prospects on defense. They've got a tradition and history of offensive linemen that they develop, grow, physical, and they teach the running game well. They do what they do as well as the Big 12 spread teams do what they do. They get big offensive linemen, they develop the run game, and they get good running backs, and they sell good running backs on, come here, be a great player, have a great pro career, and you're going to run for a ton of yards because we're going to run the football. Get quarterbacks who are smart, they protect the football. That's how they've done it. How high can they get? Listen, they are what they are because they coach it up. Are they going to ever compete with Ohio State in recruiting? No. How high can they get? I think you're seeing is what they are. Now, the only variable is, you know, can they get the right schedule break and maybe get the right matchup in the playoffs? It's going to be a lot tougher for them to, say, win a national championship today than it would have been, just like Michigan State. It's tougher today than it would have been in the BCS era. Why? You get voted into BCS, you got one game to win. If you're a good team like Wisconsin or Michigan State, you get into a playoff game and you play in Alabama, you get blown out. They get exposed from a speed standpoint. They don't play or match up well nationally against the very top teams, not just good teams, but the very top, they'll struggle. So should you expect national championships at Wisconsin? No. Could you get the right matchup in the playoff and get to a championship game? Sure, it could happen, but it's not that type of program. I think the program is good. It benefits greatly from being in the west of the Big Ten. That conference is very slanted towards, I mean, look at it. If you put Michigan State there, then Michigan State and Wisconsin are battling it out every year in the Big Ten West. Wisconsin's got a pretty easy road. Nebraska hasn't been a consistent threat. Wisconsin's been the program of the West. But Wisconsin is not where Ohio State is as a program. And it doesn't mean that they can't beat them on a game here or there. But as a program, they don't recruit the same type of players. So I think that if you're looking at the other thing he asked for me is, would you agree that the main difference between Iowa and Wisconsin is Wisconsin has a better surrounding population base to recruit from? Yes. They've got a little bit more in-state talent in the state of Wisconsin than Iowa. Not a lot, but a little more. But Iowa, Wisconsin, really, really good. And they're a cut below Michigan State in that Michigan State has a little more resources and a little more recruiting base to recruit from. But Iowa and Wisconsin and Nebraska have a lot of similarities. Nebraska is not where Iowa and Wisconsin is. That's where I think Nebraska wants to get. Wisconsin's been a little bit more consistent. Iowa's been a little bit more up and down. But both programs are developmental programs. No doubt about it. And they develop very well. But I think that's kind of where they are. Also asked about a question about, what's your opinion of Lovie Smith and his coordinators at Illinois? It's year three. Can you tell if the team is showing any real promise or too early to tell? It's a tough job. I don't think this staff recruits very well. I thought, for example, a guy like Ron Zook recruited very well, didn't coach very well. I think the biggest problem at Illinois is that they haven't focused their efforts, their resources, to make the program as good as it can be in the Big Ten. There's no reason why the right guy can't be, at least at the level of Michigan State or Wisconsin. They can do that. They've got a talent base. Yes, the best players out of the state of Illinois, they go somewhere else. Why is that? Program's not that good. If you could get the right guy, you could maybe, Jim Landry is that type of guy. You get that type of guy that can use the Iowa in Wisconsin model, the Michigan State model. At Illinois, there's no reason why they can't be that good in competing that high level. They've got the ability to do it, but they've not been very good administratively in their hires or their use of their resources. That's got to improve. If that improves, you get the right guy. There's no reason why that program can't be better. Is Lovie Smith the answer to Illinois? No. In fact, I think he's on the list of some hot coaches, along with Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, Derek Mason perhaps at Vanderbilt, definitely David Beatty at Kansas. Kalani Sitake's off to a rough start at BYU. Lovie's definitely, and again, more than just a coaching problem. And I don't think that's a great fit with Lovie there. Other than being the Bears coach in the same state, there's really nothing there that would make a lot of sense. If I were Illinois, I would really look at administratively making some changes, making more of a commitment to facilities and infrastructure, that football program, and sell that idea to a Jim Leonard type of guy. That's the key to success. But you win and lose as an organization, and they've been very poor in that regard. Okay, Jim asks, have you or will you discuss different formations, both offensive and defensive, when they're used, like down and distance, when on the field, et cetera? Well, Jim, I have done a lot of that. Do that over time. It's a very involved question. So I have and I will. This would take probably weeks, months, nonstop to go over the more exhaustive sets to go over. But let me just kind of touch on some things. Offensively, you got your spread concepts of the day. Basically is a form of option football out of the spread set with built-in bubble screens in college. You've got the 3-4 wide receiver element that you put into it. The tight ends that are becoming more of the big wide receivers that we call the Y flex guys. One backs versus two running backs, not fullbacks. That's changed. You do see the jumbo power sets at times in short yardage and goal line, but most of the spread teams like to spread you out and try to gas you. Basically, the spread concepts, just like the motion offenses in basketball, they try to spread you out, run a lot of motion, and try to get some backdoor cuts. That's what spread offense in football is today. In the NFL, you still see a lot of elements of spread. You see a lot of shotgun, less emphasis on the running game, but the running game is still very important. Defensively, you still see base 4-3 and 3-4s, but you see them morphed into similar principles. For example, all 3-4 teams become four-man fronts on passing downs. Even 3-4 teams are often one-gap teams and not true two-gap teams. More teams run base nickel today. Why? Well, you're going to have three or four receivers on the field. You got to have a nickel and, in most cases, a dime in the game. So the base defense is now more nickel base. And then multiple coverages. A lot of different zone looks, a lot of different man looks. So, yes, we will get to more and more of that, but that gives you some ideas of how you do it. When do you use it? Well, pretty simple. In short yardage goal line, you might want to run a little more power. Some teams, again, want to spread you out. You want to go with tempo. You want to mix things up with a little power, a little speed combination. To use a baseball analogy, if you got a great fastball pitcher and all he does is have a fastball, good hitters will be able to sit on that fastball and time it. But it's when you don't know when the off-speed pitch is coming that you get ahead, you get in, and you get behind again. That's when your fastball becomes really faster. Well, one of the ways that you become more effective is when you can run a little power along with your tempo and speed. That gives you a better feel for things. Richard asks, when you were at Tennessee, what are some of the defensive schemes that Jeff Fisher ran? Well, we ran a lot of 46 defense, which is basically both guard and the centers are covered. We had Blaine Bishop in the box as our strong safety that played almost like another linebacker role. But Jeff was a 4-3 guy. Jeff was a guy that wanted to get upfield with wide pressure and create seams for the defensive tackle to get upfield and penetrate and defend the run game by penetrating and tackling into the backfield. Taught a lot of press man, but taught a lot of off. Very multiple in his coverage looks. Jeff's good defensive coach, good defensive mind. He also asks, what was the reason that Urban Meyer left the University of Florida? A few reasons. One, there's some major problems, disciplinary problems at Florida, not just the Aaron Hernandez, the beginning, but there are a lot of other issues discipline-wise. He began to recruit some players that were some character risks that created a lot of the problems. I think it led to a lot of stress. I think he lost some key guys on his staff. Quite frankly, in a nutshell, Nick Saban came in. Florida was the program with Urban. Nick Saban came in, and I believe that all that frustration, all that angst, all of that really caused some health issues for Urban, frustration for Urban. I think that the advent of Nick Saban coming into the SEC had as much to do with Urban Meyer's frustration and him running out as anything. And another question, asking me to express my opinion on the coaching talent at Northwestern, including the coordinators are very good. Pat Fitzgerald's done a great job, yes. What they do in that program, and this is another developmental program, just on a different level, they really are going to benefit from that fantastic new facility that they have, which overlooks Lake Michigan. Phenomenal. It's just, they, I think, their model should be, and has been, maybe Stanford. And they've got that pedigree academically to recruit special type talent that really wants to get an education that's worth a lot more than normal degrees are worth. Not going to get the biggest, the fastest, but they coach them hard, they're smart, they're versatile, and they play the Big Ten game well. They usually run it pretty well. They usually defend the run pretty well. Those are the things that can do. Can the current staff do anything to compete for a Big Ten or national championship? No. You're not going to compete for a Big Ten or a national championship at Northwestern. I know Gary Barnett did it, and that was a great story. But for Northwestern to win the Big Ten, they have to have a perfect storm, and the teams with better resources to get football players are going to all have to have down years in the same year. So, no, this is not a program that is going to be able to compete nationally. How rich is the football recruiting around Chicago? Really rich compared to other population centers. It's really good. It's really good in the Midwest. It doesn't compare to Houston. Some of, you know, you got to look at maybe certain cities in Florida, other cities in Texas. It doesn't compare there, but it's really good. It is, you know, along with key areas in Pennsylvania, Ohio, it's very competitive, but it's not certainly like Southern California in that area. So it's really good. You can go and get a lot of good players there. It feeds a lot of the Big Ten. But, you know, it's not like Texas, Houston, where you can kind of stay in that region and get all of your players there. It's not quite to that level. All right. Want to end up today taking you back, and this is kind of the moral of the story, that there's a lot of things that take place as we talk about players and coaches at the college level, the NFL level. We want to make quick judgments based upon what happened immediately. In our microwave society, we have to have everything immediately. And if it doesn't happen immediately, it's not going to work. And if it does happen immediately, it's going to be great forever. And we don't have any substance to what we try to do and understand. And I think it leads to a lot of problems. And I go back to the 2001 NFL season and the Jets linebacker, Mo Lewis. And instead of unleashing a shot on Drew Bledsoe, he pulls up. Let's say Bledsoe stays in the game and Tom Brady doesn't come in. Because remember, that's how this whole Tom Brady started. Does Tom Brady ever get in a game that season? Does Bledsoe play the entire year? Do the Patriots make the playoffs? You know, remember, when does that Super Bowl run start? Does Bob Kraft get impatient? Let Bill Belichick go. All things that you wonder. And you look back now and you say, oh, of course. He would have been successful. They would have made it. He would have eventually started. Yeah, eventually. But when? And would there be enough patience by media, fan base, owners to allow it to happen? In essence, you know, one of the great runs in football history, NFL or otherwise, by one of the best coaches ever, would it ever happen? Now think about this. People say Bill Belichick failed at Cleveland. He didn't fail at Cleveland, folks. Bill Belichick went 11-5. First of all, inherited a bad program, an old team, and built it. Went 11-5. Went to the playoffs, beat a Bill Parcells coached New England team. The Browns were the favorites to go to the Super Bowl the next year. And that's the year that Art Modell, in the middle of the season, moved to Baltimore. The season collapsed. Bill Belichick was fired. Bill Belichick not get it done in Cleveland? Like hell he didn't. And he didn't have the Tom Brady to work it through. He got it done. Wasn't allowed to finish it. Now, Art Modell got his Super Bowl with Brian Billick. Art Modell would have been smart, been patient with Bill Belichick. Who knows? Probably never leave Cleveland. Probably have championships in Cleveland. Maybe never move. If they do move, Baltimore is the benefactor of all the success. Just, you never know. No one is patient today's society, but when you have a good thing and you know it, have the backbone to stick up for it and support it, and you'll get rewarded in the end. All right, that'll do it for today. Appreciate you joining us on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com. Check out LandryFootball.com if you haven't. Take advantage of our summer special. Use the coupon code SUMMER, S-U-M-M-E-R, and get 50% off any membership package. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great rest of the week and weekend. We'll talk to you. Remember, any questions, send them. We'll address them here at LandryFootball.com on the podcast. Talk to you Tuesday. Take care, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Jim Fannin Show quick fix on Radio Influence.
One word just keeps bouncing around my brain like a pinball in a pinball machine, and that word is reinvention. And I've gone through reinvention myself, and I think a lot of us, you've gone through reinvention. You know, reinvention occurs sometimes after a serious illness. You've recovered, and you wake up, and you go, you know, I'm going to reinvent my wellness. I'm going to start eating better, taking better care. I'm going to get it, you know, join a gym. I'm reinventing my body. This was a scare. It's a wake-up call. And that's a great time for reinvention. It could have been sooner, but, it could have been too late. Reinvention occurs not just because you wake up and have a whim. There's usually some kind of trauma, some kind of stress from the outside, not just the inside, that caused you to make a change.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.